This is Audible.
Harlequin Audio is proud to bring you Fatal Chaos, a Fatal series novel by Marie Force, performed by Eva Kaminsky. Chapter 1. What did the president know and when did he know it? That will be the question Congress faces as members return to Washington from the summer recess. Hearings begin next week, investigating President David Nelson's potential involvement in his son's sinister scheme against Vice President Nick Capuano and his family. Listening to her brother-in-law Spencer read from the morning edition of the Washington Star, Sam looked across the breakfast table at her husband Nick and saw a flash of dismay cross his handsome face. He dreaded the hearings, the attention, the renewed interest in the scandal that had rocked the nation's capital earlier in the summer. Sam and her homicide squad had uncovered the nefarious plot hatched by Nelson's son Christopher in a failed effort to discredit Nick, all because Christopher had presidential aspirations of his own. The sitting president claimed to have no knowledge of what his son had been up to, and continued to proclaim his innocence throughout the dog days of summer. In the meantime, Nick was left hanging, waiting to hear if Nelson would be impeached or forced to resign. Sam knew exactly what Nick was thinking. As much as they wanted Christopher Nelson to fry for what he'd put them through, the last thing Nick wanted, the last thing they wanted, was to see the president forced from office. Because that would mean... No, it was too much to even think about. And Sam refused to allow that stress to creep into her relaxing vacation. Standing, she said, I'm going to take a walk. Nick jumped up. I'll go with you. Was it something I said? Spencer asked. Duh. His wife, Sam's sister Angela, said, as she fed their daughter, Ella, who was seated in a high chair at the end of the long picnic-style table. You think they want to talk about that BS? Sorry, guys, Spencer said. I wasn't thinking. No worries, Nick said. It's not going away as much as we wish it would. But you don't have to deal with it this week, Spencer said. My bad. Don't sweat it. Nick held out a hand to Sam. Let's walk. She took his hand and followed him through the sliding glass doors to the deck, where several members of his Secret Service detail were gathered at a table, drinking coffee. John Brant Brantley Jr., the lead agent on Nick's detail, stood when he saw them coming.
Good morning, Mr. Vice President. Mrs. Capuano.
Morning, Brant, Nick said.
We'd like to take a walk on the beach. Of course, sir. Give us a few minutes to make that happen.
Sam watched Nick's jaw tighten with frustration. He hated having to ask permission to do something as simple as take a walk with his wife. She dropped his hand, slipped her arms around his waist, and rested her head against his chest, hoping to give him something else to think about. He put his arms around her and kissed the top of her head, his body relaxing in stages, as the agents conferred and planned for a simple walk on the beach. Except nothing was ever simple. Not anymore. Well, that wasn't entirely true. When it was just the two of them, alone together, it was still as simple as it had ever been, even as the world went mad around them. As they did when the madness swirled, they closed ranks, spent as much time alone as they possibly could, and weathered the storm the best way they knew how, by keeping their heads down, their mouths shut, and their arms wrapped around each other. The press was desperate for interviews from either, or preferably both. But other than a perfunctory statement issued from Nick's office after Christopher Nelson's arrest, they hadn't said a word about the controversy swirling around the president and his son, or how it affected them. Nor had they offered any speculation on what it could mean for them if Nelson was forced to resign. They were taking it one day, one hour, one minute at a time. It had done them good to get out of Washington for this beach getaway with their extended family. Sam had spent weeks coordinating with the Secret Service to make it happen. Planning the vacation had been a huge undertaking, that included finding a beachfront property big enough for all of them that met security requirements, clearing Nick's schedule, taking vacation from her job as the Metro Police Department's homicide lieutenant, and ensuring her paralyzed father would be able to join them for a visit. But the hassle had been so worth it. In the 3 days they'd been here, Nick had been more relaxed than he'd been in weeks. Not to mention, he was actually sleeping rather than being tortured by the insomnia that plagued him, particularly during stressful times. Sam was determined to ensure he continued to relax and didn't think too far into the future about what might happen when they returned to town the day before Labor Day.
"If you're ready, Mr. Vice President," Brant said a few minutes later.
Neither Sam nor Nick commented that they'd been ready 15 minutes ago. Nick kept an arm around her as they followed the detail down the stairs to the boardwalk that led to Dewey Beach on the Delaware coast. They'd garnered quite a bit of attention from people on the beach, but for the most part, they'd been left alone to enjoy their vacation. If by left alone you could overlook the Secret Service agents and the media that were camped nearby, hoping for a glimpse of the second family, or perhaps an exclusive, which wasn't going to happen. As they walked toward the water's edge, Sam made a conscious effort to forget the agents trailing close behind them so she could focus exclusively on her husband.
"Sorry about that back there," she said. "No need to be sorry. He was just reading the headlines plastered across the front pages of every paper in the country.
Still, we were hoping for a total break from it."
"Then we should have confiscated every smartphone, unplugged the TV, and forbidden newspaper deliveries," he said, with a note of humor in his voice. "Or we should have taken our vacation on the moon, where we'd be out of satellite range."
"I'll see if I can arrange that next year."
"I don't care where we are. As long as you and Scotty are there, I'm good."
"Even if Washington chaos interferes?"
"What would our lives be like without a little Washington chaos to keep things interesting?"
Is that a rhetorical question?"
"Yeah, babe," he said with a chuckle. "Maybe when we retire, we could get a place out here so we can walk on the beach every day. I could get used to this."
"What's this word you speak of? Retire? Who's planning to retire?"
Laughing, he said, "Only you would see that as a dirty word."
"It's a disgusting word, and I never want to hear it out of your mouth again."
"Yes, dear," he said, in the long-suffering tone of husbands everywhere. "But the beach house, that might be possible even if we never do that R-word thing, yes?"
"I might be willing to consider that. It sure is beautiful here." Seagulls squawked overhead as the waves crashed against the shore. A few families had gotten an early start, and as Sam and Nick walked past, they nodded to say hello to the stunned people they encountered. One man was so surprised to see them that he seemed to forget he'd taken his toddler to fill a bucket with water. Only Brant's quick action stopped the child from being sucked off the beach by a wave. Brant handed the sandy toddler to his grateful father.
"Sorry about that. I wasn't expecting to see the vice president and his wife on the beach."
"He must be living under a rock," Sam muttered to Nick. "The whole freaking world knows where we are."
"This must be what it feels like for a goldfish stuck in a bowl," Nick said, "constantly being watched as he swims in circles."
"Speaking of swimming..." Sam dropped her arm from around his waist, kicked off her sandals, pulled the cover up over her head, and ran for the surf, calling over her shoulder, "Catch me if you can!" She dived into a wave and resurfaced to look for Nick, but didn't see him on the beach or in the water. Then a tug from below dragged her underwater. She came up sputtering as her husband laughed at her reaction.
"I gotcha," he said,
bringing her into his embrace.
"I'll always catch you, Samantha."
Turning his back to the shore, where the Secret Service, photographers with long-range lenses, and other gawkers were probably watching them, he kissed her. Sam was tempted to look over his shoulder to see if they were attracting even more attention. But she forced herself to stay focused on him and this moment alone in the fishbowl. She curled her legs around his hips and her arms around his neck, raising her face to the warm sunshine. His hands slid up her ribs to cup her breasts under the water, running his thumbs over the hard points of her nipples. "Mr. Vice President, don't you have enough chaos and scandal swirling around you without making it worse?"
"If it means I get to cop a feel of my gorgeous cop, it's a risk I'm willing to take."
"Cop away," she said with a sigh. After all, when had she ever objected to him putting his hands on her? She gasped when she realized he'd untied the bottom half of her black bikini top. "Nick!"
"Shh.
You're playing with fire."
"No, I'm playing with my gorgeous wife."
As he pinched her nipples between his fingers, he captured her mouth in a deep, searching kiss that had her forgetting where they were and who might be watching. She couldn't spare the brain cells to care when her every thought was focused on him and the way he made her feel every time he touched her. "It's not fair that you're getting me all hot and bothered when we can't do anything about it for hours and hours."
"I feel a nap coming on."
"We can't today. Freddie and Ellen are coming out for the day." Nick moaned, loudly.
"Whose big idea was it to have friends?"
"Not mine, that's for sure." His chuckle made her smile.
"You'll have to make it up to me at bedtime."
"What do you have in mind, Mr. Vice President?"
"All sorts of dirty things.
In the meantime," he said, nuzzling her neck and setting her on fire despite the cold water,
"we need to talk about what we're going to do if this thing with Nelson goes bad."
"We have to talk about that now?"
"At some point, and now is as good a time as any."
"If we're going to talk about the possibility of you becoming president, you need to put my boobs away." He stuck out his lip in a little boy pout.
"I don't wanna. They're my favorite toys."
"Boobs or doomsday, you can't have both."
"I hate this day, and it's only 10 o'clock.
Sam laughed and patted his head as he tied her back into her bathing suit. "Why do you want to talk about this now when we're trying to pretend it's not happening?"
"I got a call yesterday from Brandon Halliwell," he said, of the Democratic National Committee chairman. "They're making plans, just in case."
She eyed him warily.
"What kind of plans?" "Well, he asked me if I've thought about who I might want to be my vice president."
Sam stared at him, pole-axed by the implications. "Come on. No way. What did you say, and why didn't you tell me this yesterday?"
"Because yesterday was a really great day at the beach, and I didn't want to ruin it for you. I told him I haven't given it a thought, and I don't intend to unless I absolutely have to. He said I absolutely have to."
"What does that mean?"
"It means the party believes Nelson won't be able to hold on to his presidency."
"Please drown me right now. Hold my head under and keep it there. That'll be a less painful way to go." He laughed and then kissed her.
"Maybe we could hold each other under and go together."
"We can't do that to Scotty. And besides, Brant would rescue us, that bastard."
"Yeah, he would."
"Could we fake our own deaths and take Scotty with us?" she asked, brightening.
"I like that idea. We could take over an island in the South Pacific and live off coconuts, rum, and nonstop sex. I could totally get on board with that plan."
Scotty would miss his friends, baseball, and video games. And the nonstop sex might annoy him, too. Nick kissed her nose and then her lips.
"And you'd miss your dad, your sisters, and your squad."
"How can this be actually happening? You were appointed vice president and could inherit the presidency. Is that even legal?"
"Unfortunately, yes. It would make me the luckiest politician in history by getting to hold the 2 highest offices in the land without spending a single day on the campaign trail."
"Yay for luck," she said, profoundly depressed by the prospect. Sure, they'd known it was possible he could ascend to the presidency if he became vice president, but neither of them had ever thought it would actually happen. Not like this, anyway. Maybe Nelson really had no knowledge of what his son was up to.
That's entirely possible. But Hallowell doesn't think it's going to matter in the final analysis. It's telling that the party is preparing for life after Nelson. It means his own supporters are turning against him. And the hearings haven't even started yet.
Sam closed her eyes, put her hands over her ears, and began to chant, "La la 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 la. Can't hear you." He tweaked her nipples, which startled her out of her tantrum.
That's no way for the potential first lady to behave.
"Still can't hear you. La 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 la." This time he kissed the protest off her lips, subduing her the way only he could. He kissed her until she had forgotten what she was protesting.
Oh, right. That. Ugh. No matter what happens, one thing will never change, and that's you and me and us and this. We got this. No matter what. Tell me you agree.
Don't wanna.
Samantha, I need this. I need you. Tell me.
She gave him her best mulish look. He tipped his head adorably, imploring her with his eyes and that face. Dear God, that face. She loved him more than anything. And there was, literally, nothing she wouldn't do for him. Which she proved beyond a shadow of a doubt when she said, "We've got this, no matter what." His arms banded around her as he rested his face against the curve of her neck, his nearness sending tingles to all her most important places.
"It's going to be okay, babe. I promise."
He'd never broken a promise to her yet, so she held on to his assurances as tightly as she held on to him, while he guided them over every wave that threatened to topple them. But deep inside, in a place she rarely allowed her thoughts to stray, she was afraid. Deeply afraid of what was to come for him. And for them. Chapter 2. Later that night, gathered around a fire on the beach with Nick, her sisters, and their husbands, as well as Sam's partner, Freddy Cruz, and his fiancée, Ellen Svensson, Sam tried to relax and enjoy the stories, the laughter, the endless flow of cocktails, and the s'mores that Sam's brother-in-law Mike made for everyone. They'd talked Freddy and Ellen into spending the night on the pull-out sofa in the living room, and she'd even gotten her straight-laced partner to indulge in a few beers. Scotty and his cousins had been sent to bed an hour ago. With a full moon hanging over the beach, a sky filled with stars, a warm breeze blowing in from the ocean, and most of her favorite people beside her or nearby, Sam should have been having the time of her life. But she hadn't been able to shake off the feeling of foreboding from this morning, or forget what Nick had told her about the call from Hallowell. They had a policy of not keeping stuff from each other, but she wished he'd kept that bombshell to himself, at least until their vacation was over. Apparently, she sucked at hiding her disquiet, because people had been asking her all day what was wrong, including her astute partner, who looked at her now with concern and dismay.
"Ah, screw it," Sam said, startling the others with her outburst.
"Tell them what you told me earlier." Nick glanced at her.
"Do I have to?"
"Yes, you have to. If I have to be freaking out about it, everyone else does too."
"The rules according to Sam," Tracy said with a grin.
"Spill it, Nick."
"The DNC chair, Hallowell, called yesterday to ask if I had a vice president in mind."
The statement was met with complete silence.
"Fuck," Spencer finally said. "That means the party is losing confidence in Nelson's ability to hang on." "Right."
Nick tended to the fire, adding another log and poking at it until the flame flared up. No one said a word, and Sam began to regret tossing a bomb into their good time.
I didn't mean to ruin everyone's fun.
You didn't, Angela said. This is a big deal. No wonder you've been so quiet today.
You should have enjoyed the quiet while you had the chance, Sam said, smiling at her sister.
What did you say to Halliwell, Nick?
Freddy asked.
I told him I haven't given a single thought to a VP, and I won't until I have to. He said it might be time to start thinking. From everything Nelson has said and done since his son's arrest, Mike said, I don't see him going down without a fight. I don't either, Nick said, but he'll be under tremendous pressure to put the country ahead of himself. Depending on what comes out during the hearings, he may not be able to fight the tide.
Tracy reached for Sam's hand and gave it a squeeze. You guys have every good reason to be freaking out. Sam held on tight to her sister's hand. It's not like we didn't know this was possible, but we didn't expect. Not like this.
Why would you expect the sitting president's son to go so far as to kill your ex-husband for info he could use against you and your vice president husband because the son has political aspirations of his own? Freddy asked.
Sam smiled at him. When you put it that way...
No one could have seen this coming, Mike said bluntly. It's right out of a blockbuster Hollywood thriller, which is why the press is salivating over every detail. I saw one report that the cable news channels are enjoying the highest ratings in history since this story broke.
Awesome, Nick said dryly.
Glad we're able to help the ratings.
Leaning on his knees, Mike leaned forward, his expression earnest.
I don't think either of you has fully grasped just how invested the American people are in seeing justice done for you, as much as they want it for the country. People are outraged over what was done to you. The threats made against your family, the murder of Sam's ex-husband, Nick's mother's awful interview, all of it.
It's true, Tracy said. Everywhere I go, people ask me how you're both doing and if you're okay. Every one of them wants Nelson's head on a platter, even if he had nothing to do with his son's scheme. Sam glanced at Nick, and he reached for her hand.
People have been so incredibly kind, Nick said.
Not all of them, Sam said, of the vocal detractors who'd sounded the alarm about the possibility of a young, unelected vice president ascending to the presidency should Nelson be forced out of office.
Most of them, Nick conceded.
I can't imagine what it must be like for you guys to be stuck in this state of limbo, waiting to see how it's going to play out, Ellen said. It has to be torturous.
It hasn't been too bad, Nick said,
downplaying it for the sake of those who would worry about him if they grasped the full extent of his anxiety. Only Sam knew how little he slept, how much he brooded, and the deep toll the stress had taken on him.
Our plan is to keep our heads down and our mouths shut and let Congress do its job. That's all we can do.
Speaking of keeping our heads down...
Sam yawned dramatically and stretched. I don't know about anyone else, but I'm ready for bed.
You know me, babe, Nick said with a salacious grin. I'm always ready when you are.
While the others groaned at his predictable comment, they helped to douse the fire and clean up the bottles and other trash from the beach. Back inside the big contemporary house, they made fast work of cleaning up the kitchen and getting Freddy and Ellen settled in the living room.
Thanks for a great day, Freddy said to Sam.
Ellen had gone to change and use the bathroom.
I'm glad you guys were able to come out. I hope you know if there's anything I can do for you through all this, I'm right here.
Sam squeezed her partner's arm.
I always know that. I plan to keep very busy planning your bachelor party. I have a to-do list a mile long before next weekend's festivities.
His amiable expression hardened into a glare.
There'd better not be any strippers on that list.
Sam cracked up and patted his indecently handsome face. My poor, delusional Freddy. Strippers are the very least of what's on my list.
He moaned as he shook his head.
Asking you to be my best man, woman, is going to turn out to be the biggest mistake of my life.
That's the goal, Sam said with a cheeky grin.
Ellen rejoined them. Are you torturing him? She asked Sam.
Me? Torture him?
Every chance she gets. Freddy held out his hand to his fiancé.
Come protect me from her.
Ellen went to him and wrapped her arms around him.
My poor baby. I'll make it all better.
Yes, please.
I'm out, Sam said, amused by them. If you need anything, let me know.
We're good, he said. Thanks again for having us.
Always a pleasure to have the opportunity to torment you, Detective. Sleep tight, and remember there are children in this house. Keep it clean out here.
Good night, Sam.
She giggled at her own joke as she closed the door to the first floor master suite.
What are you up to, babe?
Nick asked. He was already in bed, book in hand, covers pooled at his waist, leaving his gorgeous man chest in full view. He'd left the sliding glass door open to allow the warm sea air into the room. Sam realized she was staring at him. Sometimes it still amazed her that they'd managed to find each other twice in a lifetime, even with their lives out of control more often than not. She wouldn't trade her life with him for a quieter, more predictable existence with any other man.
Samantha, you okay?
As she crossed the big room, she peeled her maxi dress over her head and tossed it aside, loving the way his gaze heated at the sight of her coming toward him, wearing only a skimpy pair of panties.
To what do I owe the pleasure of this lovely show?
He asked, as she joined him on the bed, straddling his lap and tossing his book aside. It landed on the floor with a loud thunk. His hands encircled her waist before sliding down to grasp her ass and pull her in closer to him.
It all began this morning when you started something you couldn't finish in the water. I've been counting down to bedtime ever since.
So have I.
His hands roved from her bottom to her back and up to tangle in her hair so he could position her for a deep kiss.
In case I forget to mention it, this beach getaway has been the best idea you've ever had. I can't tell you how badly I needed it.
We all needed it. Scotty has had a terrific time with his cousins, and I'm enjoying having a full week with you without work or dispatch or fundraisers or reporters. I haven't missed the goddamn reporters up in our faces. The Secret Service gets mad props for keeping them away from us here.
They'll be hungrier than ever when we get back. Are you ready for that?
Looking down at his handsome face, she shook her head and ran her fingers through the chocolate brown hair that curled on the ends. I'm not ready, and I don't have to be ready for 4 more blissful days. We'll cross that bay bridge when we get to it. In the meantime, she bent her head to kiss him with teasing strokes of her tongue that quickly had him straining for more. We have lots more sex to have before this vacation is over.
Have I mentioned lately that you're the best wife I've ever had?
She snorted with laughter. I'd better be the only wife you ever have, Buster.
If you hadn't shown up at my crime scene that day at the Watergate, I never would have married anyone.
Your crime scene? She asked, brow raised. Nick grinned at her predictable reply.
Somehow, the worst day of my life became the best, too.
It had been a while since he mentioned finding his best friend and boss murdered, but she knew he thought of John O'Connor every day and always spoke of him with fondness and affection. What would John say if he could see you now? Sam asked. Vice president and people floating the possibility of... He kissed the question right off her lips.
Don't say it. There are so many better things we can do with your mouth than talk about that.
Smiling, she ran her lips back and forth over his.
Such as? More of this.
He tightened his hold on her hair and kissed her with sweeping strokes of his tongue that had her squirming on top of him, trying to get closer to the rigid length of his cock beneath her. She broke the kiss, gasping.
I'm down with that. Speaking of going down. I'm down with that, too. I'm down with anything you want.
He raised a swarthy eyebrow, and Sam thought that if the women of America could see their insanely sexy vice president in that moment, they'd lose their collective minds.
Anything.
Whatever you want.
You're feeling frisky tonight, my love.
I'm on vacation with all my favorite people and currently in bed with my favorite husband. I'm feeling happy tonight.
I'm glad to hear you say that. I've been worried about how you're handling everything.
Don't worry about me. I'm okay if you're okay.
I will always worry about you.
And I could be more okay, he said, raising his hips suggestively.
Subtle, Mr. VP. Very subtle. A wise woman once told me I suck at subtlety.
Sometimes you're very good at it. She began with kisses to his lips and face, laying a path along his jaw and then hovering over his ear. Because they had all night and could sleep in, she took her own sweet time, working her way down his neck and along his collarbone. Nuzzling the soft hair on his chest, Sam breathed in the clean, fresh scent of home before nudging his nipple with the tip of her tongue. He sucked in a sharp, deep breath and again fisted handfuls of her long hair. She continued to go slow, dragging her tongue over each hill and valley of his well-defined abdomen, following the soft trail of hair that led to his cock, which was so hard it nearly reached his belly button.
Someone looks happy to see me. He's always happy to see you. In fact, you're his favorite person ever.
Sam snorted with laughter. Sex with him was always fun, and often funny. He made her so damned happy. The least she could do for him was to try to give him something else to think about, other than the dark cloud that hung over them, threatening to burst open at any moment.
Speaking of bursting,
she wrapped her hand around the thick base of his cock and stroked him the way he liked it, a little rough and fast. He groaned deeply and raised his hips to encourage her. She drew the wide head into her mouth and applied subtle suction as she took him in while continuing to stroke him. The combination always drove him crazy, and this time was no exception. His fingers tangled in her hair as his hips rose and fell in a rhythmic motion. Sam took him as deep as she could before drawing back and treating him to some tongue action.
Fuck, he whispered on a long hiss of air. Babe.
Using her free hand, she gave his balls a gentle squeeze as she sucked him in again. That finished him off, as she'd known it would. She stayed with him until he sagged into the mattress, demolished, just the way she wanted him.
Jesus, he said when he could speak again. Are you trying to kill me?
Hardly. Sam stretched out next to him and pulled a lightweight blanket over them. I need you too much to kill you. And besides, that'd be too much paperwork when I'm on vacation. Sam hated paperwork.
Whatever I did to deserve that, remind me to do it again tomorrow.
She laughed. I just wanted you to think about something other than the thing we can't stop thinking about.
Mission accomplished. You completely fried my hard drive. And now all I can think about is sex. More sex. Lots and lots of sex.
Oh, crap. What have I done? How can you want more sex than you already have?
Apparently, my desire for you is limitless.
That's more than fine with me. Sam yawned and snuggled in closer to him.
I know you really don't want me to say this. But I'm still sorry I brought all this additional insanity into our lives, when we certainly had enough to begin with.
I really don't want you to say that. You have no reason to apologize to me or Scotty or anyone. You were asked to serve your country. No one can fault you for what's happened since then.
Still, I hate that it's been so stressful for you and Scotty, even if neither of you says much about it.
Sam raised herself up on one elbow.
It's only stressful for us because we can see what it's doing to you. She caressed his face, noting the dark circles and lines of exhaustion that were new in the last few months. His insomnia was always merciless, but never more so than since he'd become vice president. What do you say we agree to take this situation 1 minute at a time and not get too far ahead of ourselves with what might happen? She asked.
I think that's the only way we can do it.
So, no more speculation or talk of vice presidents or conversations with the DNC or anything other than contending with whatever is happening in that very minute?
I'll put out the word that I don't want to talk about it until or unless I absolutely have to.
Excellent. She dropped her head to his chest and put her arm across his midsection.
You should know, however, that it's going to take a lot of distractions to keep my mind from wandering.
Even though he couldn't see her face, she rolled her eyes.
Your subtlety still sucks.
You just said I was getting better at it.
He moved quickly, taking her by surprise when he came down on top of her, perfectly positioned for further distraction.
Nice move, Sam said,
gazing up at the gorgeous hazel eyes that always looked at her with love and affection and desire and a million other emotions that couldn't be easily summarized in mere words.
You liked that?
She nodded, loving that he seemed so pleased with himself.
I like all your moves.
How about this one?
With one determined tug, he ripped the silk panties from her body and entered her in a single thrust that buried him to the hilt.
That was a good one, too, she said, when she had caught her breath.
He nuzzled her neck as he began to move.
Hold on to me, babe, and don't let go, no matter what.
She wrapped her arms and legs around him, wanting him as close as she could get him. I'll never let go. Chapter 3. They returned to the city on the Sunday of Labor Day weekend with a morose 13-year-old in full mourning for the end of summer vacation.
It's so unfair, Scotty said. The vacation goes by so fast and the school year crawls.
I used to feel the same way, Sam said. The end of vacation was like torture.
It is torture, Scotty agreed. No more sleeping late or watching TV until midnight or going to the beach or baseball camp or anything fun for months.
I feel you, buddy, Sam said.
Samantha, Nick said, in the stern tone he saved for special occasions. This might be a good opportunity to remind our son of the value of education and how important it is that he give eighth grade his full effort so he can use this year to prepare for high school.
Sam and Scotty exchanged glances.
Nah, they said together, cracking up and high-fiving.
You two think you're so funny, Nick said.
We are funny, Scotty said, and you're no help whatsoever in this situation. Do you think I want to hear about high school when I have a whole year of eighth grade algebra to suffer through first?
He does make a good point, Sam said, earning a glare from her husband.
1 minute at a time, remember?
Yeah,
Nick said, recognizing defeat when it stared him in the face. The Secret Service motorcade arrived at the 9th Street checkpoint, where they were stopped for much longer than usual.
What's the delay, Brett? Nick asked.
Huge media swarm.
And just that quickly, they were reminded of what they were coming home to. It took the Secret Service 10 minutes to clear a path for the motorcade to proceed onto 9th Street. As they alighted from the car, shouts for comment about the upcoming hearings, the president's son, whether Nick was preparing to be president, and other things they couldn't make out filled the air around them.
Welcome home, Nick said grimly,
as he eyed the massive gathering outside the gate.
The neighbors must be thrilled to have us back.
Escorted by agents in front of and behind them, they went up the ramp outside their double townhouse to the front door, manned by a new agent on Scotty's detail.
Mr. Vice President, Mrs. Capuano, Scotty, welcome home.
Hope you had a nice vacation.
Thanks, Liam, Nick said. It was a great vacation.
That ended far too soon, Scotty added. One more day and then back to the grind.
What's this I hear?
Skip Holland asked as he manipulated his electric wheelchair through the big living room to greet them. Sam's dad and his wife, Celia, had come out to the beach for a day, but had chosen not to stay for the whole time. Sam suspected that he hadn't wanted to disrupt their good time with his medical needs, but he'd never say so.
Is someone unhappy to be heading back to school?
Unhappy is putting it mildly, Sam said.
School is a necessary evil, Skip said bluntly.
I'm surrounded by educational rebels, Nick said, throwing up his hands.
Scotty laughed. I definitely landed in the right family. His statement hit Sam square in the heart. She loved hearing him say things like that, especially when they had reason to wonder if he would someday resent the limitations he would experience as he grew older, surrounded by Secret Service agents watching his every move. For now, he was as happy and well-adjusted as could be, except when the first day of school loomed. Sam bent to kiss her dad's forehead, one of the few places he still had sensation after being shot on the job 3.5 years ago.
How you doing, Skippy?
Hanging in, baby girl. How was the rest of the vacation?
Fantastic, delightful, and amazing, Sam said. I can't wait to go back next year.
A whole year,
Scotty moaned as he flopped on the couch.
I'll never make it.
Go get unpacked, drama queen, Sam said to her son.
Do I have to?
Yes, you have to. And take a shower, too.
And so it begins,
Scotty said to Skip, dismay radiating from him. Skip laughed at his theatrics.
Part of being a man is doing things you don't want to do because it's the right thing. Just ask your dad. He knows all about it.
He knows all too well, Sam said.
Now you guys are making me feel bad for whining, Scotty said. Compared to Dad, I ain't got no problems. And don't tell me ain't a word. It was used for effect.
Sam cracked up along with her husband and father. What had they ever done for entertainment before Scotty came into their lives? She went to her son and hugged him. I promise we'll do everything we can to make the re-entry as painless as possible, beginning with a bowl of ice cream as big as your head after you unpack and shower. Deal? He flashed that irrepressible grin that reminded her so much of Nick's, even though they didn't share DNA. Father and son were alike in many ways, except in their attitudes toward education. In that way, he was entirely Sam's son.
Deal.
Dragging his suitcase behind him, he scampered up the stairs, the suitcase banging on every step as he went.
That kid,
Nick said, shaking his head.
Is the best, Skip added. I get such a kick out of him.
Don't we all? Sam said. He has us firmly wrapped around all 10 of his fingers. But we can't let him know that or we'll lose complete control of the asylum.
I know a little something about being wrapped around a certain someone's little finger,
Skip said with a meaningful smile for Sam.
And if you don't want him to turn out like you, proceed with caution.
Hey! Sam laughed at the impish expression on the one side of her father's face that hadn't been left frozen by the stroke he'd suffered after being shot. Her cell phone rang, and she glanced at the caller ID, groaning loudly when she saw the number for dispatch.
Not yet. I'm still on vacation until midnight.
You don't have to take the call,
Nick reminded her. If they're calling me before I'm officially back, whatever it is must be bad. She flipped open her phone. Holland. Lieutenant, I was asked to inform you of a fatal drive-by shooting of a teenager in Southeast. The dispatcher rattled off an address in the Penn Branch neighborhood, southeast of the Anacostia River. Are you able to report to the scene? Sam's stomach ached at the thought of a child roughly the same age as her own son being gunned down in her city. I'll be there. She closed the phone and told her dad and Nick what had happened.
Ah, crap, Skip said. The kids are the worst.
Sorry to hear it, babe, Nick said, putting his arm around her and kissing her temple. She looked up at him. I have to go, even though I'm not officially back on duty yet. Hope you understand.
Of course I do. Just be careful out there.
I always am. She kissed him and then kissed her dad's forehead again. I'm going to change my clothes. A crime scene was no place for another of the maxi dresses she'd bought for the beach.
Let me know about the case when you get a chance, Skip said.
You know I will. Sam dashed upstairs to the closet that Nick had made for her in the smallest bedroom and changed out of the dress and into jeans, a t-shirt, and running shoes. She grabbed an MPD sweatshirt, since HQ was like a meat locker this time of year with the AC set to frost. Crossing the hall to her bedroom, she went to the locked drawer in her bedside table to retrieve her service weapon, badge, and the notebook that she jammed into a back pocket of her jeans as she ran for the stairs. Adrenaline pumped through her, as it always did, when a new case required her focus. In the living room, Nick waited to see her off.
Did Dad leave?
Yeah, he said he'll talk to you later. And you'll see to the bowl of ice cream as big as his head for the boy when he gets out of the shower?
I will, he said with a smile.
Tell him I'm sorry I had to leave.
I'll do that too.
He kissed her.
Thanks for a great vacation. You have no idea how badly I needed it.
I think I have a small idea. Whatever happens in the next few weeks, we'll handle it the way we always do. Try not to worry.
That's like telling me not to breathe. But I can do it for you.
He kissed her again.
The whole world wants a piece of us right now, so be extra vigilant. Don't let anyone touch what's mine.
As a modern, independent woman, she ought to hate when he showed his alpha side. But she didn't hate it. She loved that he was so protective of her. I won't. Love you.
Love you too.
Liam opened the front door for her and nodded to her as she headed for the ramp and the tricked-out black BMW Nick had outfitted for any possible on-the-job emergency she might encounter. The windows and side panels were bulletproof. The technology so sophisticated, she'd never understand how it all worked, and she had provisions for 3 days off the grid if it ever came to that. As she drove the short distance from her Capitol Hill home to the crime scene, she called Freddy.
Welcome back, Lieutenant.
Thank you. Did you hear some hoodlums in Southeast threw a welcome party for me?
I got the call, and I'm on the way.
But aren't you off duty until midnight?
They called me, gave me the choice, and I'm on the way, too.
Oh, good. I hate cases involving kids. I'm glad you'll be there.
Do you have anything more about the kid who was killed?
I know as much as you do.
All right. I'll see you in a few.
Sam tossed the phone to the passenger seat and pressed down on the accelerator, eager to get back in the game. She couldn't imagine any other life for herself than one that included chasing down murderers and throwing their guilty asses in jail. If things went sideways with Nelson and Nick became president, would she be forced to give up her job? When he became vice president, they learned that only the president, vice president, president-elect, and vice president-elect were required to have Secret Service protection. That was how she'd managed to hang on to her job, for now, without a detail in tow. But being First Lady would be a whole new ballgame, and she was under no illusions about what that would probably mean for her.
Take your own advice and don't think about that until you have to.
The very thought of being sidelined in the gilded cage that was the White House made her break out into a cold sweat that had her turning off the AC and opening the window to let in the stifling humidity. The unusually heavy traffic was indicative of a home game for the D.C. Federals baseball team, one of several possible explanations for gridlock on the Sunday night of a holiday weekend. Sam drove into the Penn Branch neighborhood, made up of a mix of middle-class single-family homes and poverty-ridden housing projects.
The neighborhood formed a triangle between Pennsylvania Avenue Southeast and Branch Avenue Southeast. Sam pulled onto Hilltop Terrace Southeast. Rows of townhomes lined the street, which was currently filled with emergency vehicles. She parked behind a squad car and took off toward the epicenter of action half a block away. Patrol had taped off the area where a crowd had formed around the covered body. From the other side of the street, Sam saw Chief Medical Examiner Dr. Lindsay McNamara working her way through the large crowd with her deputy, Dr. Byron Tomlinson. Sam zeroed in on a wailing black woman being supported by two equally distraught young women. Her gut clenched with empathy for the woman, who had to be the victim's mother. How anyone survived losing a child to violence was beyond her. She could barely stand to work cases that involved kids. "What have we got?" she asked Officer Beckett, who greeted her at the tape line. He held it up for her to go under. "Jamal Jackson, 15. Picked off in a drive-by as he was walking home with friends." "Do we have the friends?" Beckett nodded toward the stairs of a nearby townhouse, where two traumatized teenage boys sat on the stoop, under the care of another patrol officer and two EMTs. "The mom was all over him when we arrived," Beckett said, letting her know their crime scene had been compromised. "Let me see." She followed Beckett to the covered body and squatted for a closer look as he lifted the fabric to reveal the handsome boy who'd been struck in the right side of the head by the bullet. A tragic waste of a young life. Sam glanced up at Lindsay, noting her red hair was up in its customary ponytail and her hazel eyes brimmed with compassion. "Let me get the mom out of here before you get started, Doc." "Good idea. And welcome back. We missed you." "Wish I could say the same." Sam stood. "What do we know about the family?" she asked Beckett. He consulted his notebook. "Danita Jackson, single mom of three. Jamal was her youngest. Those are her daughters, Misty and Tamara, with her. Misty told me he's never been in any trouble. Honor roll student, hard worker. Plays basketball in a rec league and at school." "Son of a bitch," Sam muttered. "You said it, LT." "How'd they hear about it?" "One of the friends called Tamara." She took a deep breath and sought the fortitude she needed to talk to Jamal's devastated mother and sisters. "Mrs. Jackson." Sam showed her gold shield. "I'm Lieutenant Holland, MPD." "We know who you are," one of the daughters said. Sam had become accustomed to that response since Nick became vice president. "May I have a word with you across the street?" "This way, Lieutenant," Sergeant Tommy Gonzo Gonzalez said as he arrived on the scene with Freddy. They cleared a path for Sam to escort the three women to the other side of the street and down the block, away from the fray of first responders, neighbors, and reporters who'd begun to arrive. "I'm so very sorry for your loss." Sam kept half an eye on the reporters, who were being waylaid by Beckett and the other patrol officers.
"I don't want your sympathy," Danita said between sobs. "I want the person who killed my baby."
She began to wail, and her daughters tried to comfort her through their own distress.
"I want that too, and I'll do everything in my power to find the person who did this."
Sam withdrew the notebook from her back pocket. "Can you tell me where he was coming from?"
"They went to see the new IMAX movie at the Air and Space Museum."
Danita wiped tears from her face.
"My baby wanted to be an astronaut. He was obsessed with space and flying. He was going to make something of himself."
Sam's heart broke as she took notes. "Did your son have any conflicts with anyone?"
"Not that I knew of. Everyone liked him. He had lots of friends."
"And no involvement with gangs?"
"Absolutely not. He knew I'd have his ass if he even talked to those people. I stayed on top of him. I always knew where he was and who he was with. I did everything I could to keep him out of trouble. How could this have happened to my son?"
She broke down again, and her daughters tried to comfort her as tears ran down their faces. In a softer tone, she said,
"He was a good boy, Lieutenant. A son any mother would be proud of."
I'm so sorry for your loss, ma'am. We'll do everything we can to get justice for Jamal.
What will it matter? Tamara asked bitterly.
It won't bring him back.
No, it won't.
But it'll ensure that whoever did this can't do it to anyone else.
I'll need contact information for each of you.
She handed her notebook and pen to Misty. She wrote down the information and returned the notebook to Sam. Sam gave her a business card.
If there's anything I can do for any of you, anything at all, please don't hesitate to call. My cell number is on there.
Thank you for your kindness, Danita said. I so admire you and your husband. I never dreamed that this is how I might meet you.
Sam squeezed her arm. Please call me if I can help.
She nodded, and Sam left them to cross the street, ducking back under the tape.
Tell me about the friends, she said to Beckett.
Consulting his notes, he said,
Vincent and Dina on the left and Corey Ritchie on the right.
I ran all three boys, and only Ritchie popped up as being in the system for a misdemeanor that was adjudicated in juvie. EMTs checked them out, and they're as okay as they can be under the circumstances. A little shell-shocked, but that's to be expected.
Good work, Beckett. Thank you.
She approached the two boys, who sat together on the stairs of a townhouse.
I'm Lieutenant Holland, Metro PD.
You're the chick that nailed that guy at the parade, Vincent said.
Like Jamal, he was black, but had dyed his hair blonde.
Yeah, that was me.
That was cool.
Glad you thought so.
I'd like to speak to you separately, if you don't mind.
Vincent, can you please come with me?
He exchanged glances with Corey, who was Hispanic.
I guess so.
Sam walked him 100 feet from where his friend sat on the stoop.
Can you tell me what happened today?
We went to the movies at the Air and Space. Jamal, he liked that spaceship and begged us to go with him so he wouldn't have to go by himself. It was pretty cool.
How'd you get there? Sam asked.
Took the bus, Vincent said. And we was walking home when this car came flying down the street. It was going so fast that we kind of jumped out of the way because we were afraid it might hit us. Then there was a loud boom and Jamal, he just went down.
Did you get a good look at the car?
He shook his head. It happened so fast, Vincent said. The car was long gone by the time we realized Jamal had been shot.
Think about it. Was it a regular car or a truck or an SUV? Any detail you can give us would help.
For a long moment, he was quiet as he tried to remember.
I think it was black. An irregular car. Not a truck or an SUV. But I can't be sure. It was like a flash flying by us. And when we heard the boom, I got kind of confused about what was happening. I was on the inside. Jamal was closest to the street and Corey was in the middle.
Vincent wiped a tear off his face.
Why would anyone want to hurt Jamal? He was the nicest kid.
It's very possible, Sam said, that these guys, whoever they are, were looking to hurt someone, and it didn't matter who it was.
That's so fucked up, Vincent said.
I agree. I have to ask if any of you had any contact with gangs or friends who are in gangs.
We all know people who are into that shit, but we aren't.
Did Jamal or either of you have any beefs with anyone?
Nah, Vincent said. Nothing that would get us shot. Some chirping and crap on Twitter. Whatever. No one wanted us dead. Least not that we knew about.
You've been very helpful.
She handed him her card. If you think of anything else, call me. Even if it's the smallest detail that comes back to you tomorrow or the next day or chatter you see online, call me.
He nodded in acknowledgement.
I'm really sorry about your friend.
Thanks, Vincent said, wiping more tears from his face.
She had a similar conversation with Corey, who didn't add anything new to what Vincent had told her. Sam went to talk to Beckett.
Have their parents been called?
They're on their way.
Don't bring them down here. Meet them at the corner or something. They don't need to see this.
Yes, ma'am.
Beckett ushered the boys to the far end of the street.
What's the plan, Lieutenant?
Gonzo asked. Sam took a good look around at the nearby houses.
We need an APB for a fast-moving black sedan.
Make sure they know these people are armed and not afraid to shoot.
I'll take care of that,
Gonzo said. What do we have for cameras around here?
There's one at either end of the block, and I've already asked Archie to pull the feed.